The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
Footy Prime, new season, take one.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime. We are back for another brand new season. How it will unfold? Who knows? We've got lots of plans, lots of ideas. We always have plans and ideas, and they don't always get executed. But we've got some good ideas. Anyway, I'm James Sharman. We've got Amy Walsh here. We've got Jimmy Brennan. We've got Danielle Wongerton. We've got JC. That's Jeff Cole. We haven't got Craig Forrest today, but he'll be back later this week. Hello, everyone. Does it feel like the season's starting? The reason I say it's starting is because European season's kind of kicked off. Premier League's coming up this weekend. But it doesn't seem as if there's been much of a break from the World Cup to now. But I do feel a little bit energized, enthused about the season ahead. It's a ton of really compelling storylines. But does it feel like we've had that big... Ah, what a great summer without football, you know, outside of MLS.
No, it does not feel that way at all.
And Sharms, I wanted to ask you a question. Who is this show brought to you by?
Well, I did that already.
Did you?
Yeah. It's the first thing I said.
Oh, I missed it.
But it's BetMGM anyway. BetMGM.
There you go. Two mentions.
Danielle Wongerton, not such a good listener.
No, the act of listening is failing this morning.
A new season, but the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Thank God.
But yeah, it doesn't really feel like it. I mean, Jimmy, you're involved in football anyway, you know, day to day, TFC. Do you feel you've any kind of break this off-season?
No, I'm exhausted. I still haven't recovered from the World Cup. That was a killer thing for everybody. There was a lot going on. Awful lot. But I am excited for the Premier League because I love waking up in the mornings on a weekend, sitting down, watching my games. And then the NFL starts later. And that is my weekend, Premier League and NFL.
Yeah, you know what? I was telling the missus that this week. I said, next Saturday, watch out because, you know, it's a different morning to how we've been generally spending mornings recently. You know,
I'm not leaving. You're warning her.
Yeah.
Doing yoga.
Next Saturday, watch out.
Coffee and tea and breakfast in bed while I watch the football.
Your couple's retreat, your yoga, holding hands in the sunlight, all of that has disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly has.
Hey, Sharms.
Yeah.
Before we dive into the Prem and Community Shield and things kicking off and Wonger doing his deep dive on EFL and the championship, Jimmy mentioned that he was still feeling a bit knackered from the World Cup coverage, but Jimmy, you did have a little bit of a break where you went abroad.
I did. I went to Ireland for 5 days. And then I found myself even more exhausted after that trip. Went for 5 days. Landed Friday morning, did what you have to do when you get to Dublin, is you go to the pub called The Landing and you have your first Guinness on Irish soil.
Mm.
Then went to the hotel, checked in, had a little walk around Dublin town, and then went to St. Pat's and watched them play Dundalk. So a friend of mine, Gerald O'Brien, is the general manager at the club. And we went to the supporters club first, had a couple of beers with them, then walked into the stadium, and it was great because it's authentic, it's organic, right? Small 7,000 seat stadium, grass pitch, the old turnstiles, all that kind of stuff. And it was a great game, really good match of football. The next day on a Saturday, just chilled out, enjoyed the city, had a little walk around. And then I sent a note to a friend and said, hey, listen, the All-Ireland final is on Sunday. Is there any chance I could buy some tickets? And he went, no chance. He goes, it's gold dust trying to get to this game. So we thought, okay, Sunday morning, let's go to Howth, which is an hour away. We're going to walk along the coast. And we did this two-hour walk along the coast. And it was beautiful but terrifying at the same time, meaning that you're on this little path. You got the Atlantic Ocean to your left, and it's just a straight 60, 70 foot drop. And it's one of those, if you sneeze or fart, you're over. You have to be very careful.
And it's like when you're postpartum, same thing.
It's called a snark.
And then we get to the top of this big hill. We start coming down, and we stopped off at this pub and just said, okay, let's have a pint with the locals. And then I look at my phone. I've got 3 missed calls. So I pick up my phone. I call my friend. He said, what's up? I said, everything okay? He goes, hey, listen, where are you? I said, I'm in Howth. He goes, can you get back to Dublin within 50 minutes? He goes, I've got you 2 tickets to the All-Ireland final. And I was like,
amazing.
Absolutely. Jumped in an Uber, went, picked up tickets, hotel, and we got to the match about 5 minutes before they kicked off, and it was 82,000 people in this place.
Amazing.
It was absolutely rammed. So it was Mayo playing Kerry. Now, Mayo hasn't won in 75 years, and part of the reason being is because the last time that they won, they were on the team bus, they went by a funeral, and they were still celebrating. Now, what you're meant to do is you're meant to stop, turn off the car, right? Pay your respect, and then continue your journey. Well, it was a bit of a gypsy funeral where the woman actually put a spell on the team and said, May Mayo never win again until every person on that bus is dead. Oh, the last person to die, the last
person. She wasn't messing around.
You know, she was all business, this woman. The last person to die was in April. So the whole country wanted Mayo to win this because they got to the final about 5 times before, but never won. And they lost in like silly situations and games they should have never have lost. Anyways, they ended up winning the first time in 75 years.
So the curse was lifted.
The curse was lifted.
And you were there for it. That's incredible.
I was there for it. Then on the Sunday, I had to go do a presentation for the next pro-licensed candidates. With the FAI, the Football Association of Ireland. So I went and did that. It was good to see some familiar faces. And then we did the Guinness tour, which was great. You have to do it if you end up going.
Mm-hmm. Wait, hang on a minute. You just glossed over the fact that you went to the Irish Football Association
for a presentation. Kidding.
Can you spend a little bit more time on that, please?
Yes, that was actually about dealing with upper management as well as lower management, right? So how you deal with your staff and the players, who you let take in charge, and then dealing above you. So if you're a head coach, dealing with the GM, dealing with the president, the owners. And then we did a little fireside chat and opened it up, had some Q&A. So it was really good.
Good for really you, good. Jimmy.
So Jimmy, did you regale some York United stories in that section?
Yeah, I think I did, actually. I did.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you do these chats, it's important to be open, right? Because a lot of people are going to be going through the same situations that you've gone through. And you have to leave everything on the table and be completely honest. I told them what happened and certain situations, you know, at the time at TFC when I left there and at York. And
Jimmy, do they all know that you had a winning record as a coach and assistant coach? Do they all know that part?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Did you tell the story about when you split your pants?
No, they didn't ask me about curling. No, I couldn't tell them that my balls were dragging on the edge.
And the Guinness tour. Now the end of the Guinness tour. Yeah, I haven't done that yet. I've done the Jameson tour, but not the Guinness tour.
Mm. Yeah, it was amazing. It was really, really good. You walk in, it's almost like a Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. Really, the same alcoholics.
So did you lose a couple of adults along the way? Is that what?
Was there a real fat German kid? He just left his Guinness.
Yeah, just sweating. Oh,
those are just actually Irish people.
Yeah.
That sounds
so
like
it was great. And then you actually get a ticket to go up to the this area that overlooks all of Dublin. It's all glass. They got like a DJ in there playing. Everybody's having a pint. And really, really cool. So if you've never done it and you go to Dublin, make sure you try it. And then we went out for a nice dinner that night and then flew back home in the morning. So it was it was a great little getaway. Crammed in an awful lot within those few days.
Yeah. It's a great trip. I hear that Mayo are renowned for spreading the ball around the field really well.
Yes.
That's a bit rich, Charms.
That's great, though. That's some trip, though. That's cool. So, yeah, so you have exhausted. Had no time off, basically, between the World Cup and now. But here we are. And we had the Community Shield this past weekend, which is kind of the official curtain raiser, they say, for English football. The EFL, the championship, of course, enjoyed its first weekend. Wonga watched all the games, apparently, which surprised us all.
It seemed like there were good highlights on, and I wanted to stay involved. And then I also watched MLS highlights, which, I mean, Canada's teams had a good run this weekend. Or a better than average, what we're used to, right?
Well, TFC won for the first time in a while.
Yes.
Great goal by Nicholas Dorsch, by the way. This new midfielder from Germany. Looks pretty tidy. The next, Michael Bradley, they're saying, which is, let's not give people labels. Michael Bradley is still probably the face of this team, him and Jovinko, over the last, 20-odd years or now. So, but looks pretty decent, tasty player. Montreal won. Alexis Sanchez Dubs.
Mm-hmm.
No, has signed a two-year deal.
They drew,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, which is a win. Is that? I think that's the point, right, Shem? They won.
It's something. They're still struggling to get a win at home. Mm. But yeah, like this is a big deal in Montreal, right? This is what the supporters have been clamoring for, and you haven't had this type of player, like a big name, make a huge splash in Montreal and create tons of buzz since Drogba, right? This is what everybody's been asking for. So I think Lucas Saputo, I think kudos to him for bringing in this type of player, is yet to see how he fits into Philippe Udefroy's system. But I think you come into a team where there's tons of youth. You've obviously got Prince Owusu, who leads the charge there. Is that veteran talisman for them? If anyone's relied upon to score some goals, it's him. But you've got tons of kids like Sinchuk and others who need a little bit of help, a little bit of refinement in that box. So who better to come in and be that person who can put your arm around or his arm around the shoulder of these kids and teach them in training and be that role model, but also create the buzz, as I mentioned. Like, you saw it when he was presented to the city and to the fans, and you saw it at Stade Saputo on the weekend. But once this guy arrives on the scene and then he makes an impact on the training ground, I think you really see it spill over into some results.
Hmm. I got to be honest, though. I didn't know Alexis Sanchez was still playing.
Yeah, no, same.
I don't think a lot of people did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is he, listen, 37?
He's
37, yep.
37. Listen, he was, in his prime, one of the most exciting players in European football. Udinese, he was outstanding at. And then, of course, his time at Arsenal, Barcelona. Brilliant footballer. And I suppose if he just brings a little bit of that panache, he'll be a fan favorite. I hope it works out. But he's 37, a guy that was known for his quickness. Does that still exist? We're going to find out. Big name. You're shaking your head there, Wonga. You think at 37, you lose that.
Just like, you don't know anymore. There's so many of these players who are sneaky smart, but athleticism does, father time, mother time, always wins. But now we're seeing these superhumans like Ronaldo, all of a sudden, and they, like 50-year-old goalies, and these guys, who was that from the Cap Verde? The guy's like 41 years old, and finally,
Vizinha?
Yeah, Vizinha signs a professional contract. And you're just like, I guess people are, and in other sports, LeBron. I mean, the guys, the people take care of their bodies now that we never did before. Anybody. And it's paying off. 20 years ago, when they started doing this, everyone's like, oh, they're crazy. They're not crazy. They had the long game. It's kind of like Footy Prime, knowing that it's the beginning of this season. So we all came in enthusiastic, excited.
Are we the Vosinias of the pod world?
7 years in, brother.
Realize, oh, they exist now. That's fine.
Are pod years like dog years?
They're like, I think people also said, oh, I thought James Sharman retired.
Yeah. Did he die?
I love that game. I get that quite a bit. Like, oh, weren't you? Yeah, you're the soccer guy. Yeah, like, what are you doing? I miss you. Are you still? I'm kind of still doing it. Got a podcast, here and there.
I have to say that I've heard from like veteran people in the media kind of landscape and community here in Montreal who I connected with or reached out over the course of the Men's World Cup. And you got particular kudos, but so did Footy Prime. A lot of people were plugged into our content and our coverage, but you were usually at the forefront of it. They're like, tell Sharms that he's doing a fabulous job.
Well, thanks.
So here I am telling
that's
you now.
Nice to hear. Whether it's true or not, I appreciate that.
Am I the type of person who would just invent that right now? No.
Well, I think you do pity me. So
stop.
No, but listen, it is an exciting signing. Listen, you can break it down and saying, yeah, another aging former superstar coming to MLS, but who knows? If he's got 1 year in him or the remainder of this season, they're still on the cusp of the playoffs. They're not out, right? It could be a great signing and just fun. Sports should be fun. You mentioned Ronaldo. He's talking about retiring now, finally. Mm-hmm. He just said literally that.
Finally.
Well, listen, I mean, he goes, this is probably going to be my last year. And my contract with Al Nassr ends end of the season. This will probably be it. Now, is that negotiating for another contract or is he done? He says, Jimmy, that, you know, he wants more fun and he won't be involved in football when he leaves. And listen, if you're Ronaldo with that bank account, you can do what the hell you want. Does football become less fun, Jimmy, as you approach the end?
I don't know, because every time I see his pictures, it looks like he's having fun when he's on his yacht and he's flying in his jet.
That's true.
Right? So how much more fun does he want? He's taking the piss now.
Seriously. I want more fun than this.
More fun than this in a 200 and something million I make a year.
Yeah, now you
could
put it that
possibly
way.
Have more fun?
Well, that's the question, right? Ex-professional who thinks there'll be more fun post-playing career will soon realize that post-playing career isn't quite as cracked up as it maybe is being portrayed, right? You do miss it.
Will he get fat?
No.
Maybe
his ego and pride will not allow it.
So we could see what he looked like.
Yeah. How amazing would that be if we see him like his namesake? With due respect to his namesake, Ronaldo, who's brilliant, but put a few pounds on. How great would it be to see Ronaldo disappear for a year or so as he retires and enjoys his life more and returns to some, I don't know, some big event and he's fat? I would love that.
Eating a cheeseburger.
Yeah. I've discovered food. Food is fun. It's way more fun than the 6 a.m. gym sessions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it always happens. It happens to everybody when they retire, don't they? You end up putting on weight because you're not working out as much and you're not strict. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of realize, oh, now it's time to start working out again a little bit.
Yeah, you need that reality check, like that photo that you're not cognizant that it's being taken and it catches you in a profile and the kit's just a little bit too clingy. You're not sucking in your gut. You're like, dear God,
it's true.
I need to get to the gym.
I found myself in a picture as well. I was eating wings with my cousins and I went, enough's enough now.
Oh. was it
a bad angle?
It was terrible. Terrible. Mm-hmm. I was just disgusted with myself. I was like, oh no.
Well, we all have that picture, right?
No, oh yeah.
I deleted it.
So you don't make reference to it? You don't like put it up on the fridge? No?
No, it's stuck in my head.
Mm. I was going to say, though, part of his quote, sorry, Charms, keep doing this. Of his quote is that he wants to leave a spectacular legacy. So if he does disappear for a while, I don't see him reemerging on like the charity game circuit.
No.
You know, like, because he wouldn't want to sully or tarnish that image, right?
And it's interesting, isn't he? He's too competitive still. I mean, he'd still be, I mean, listen, he wants to retire today then, because your legacy, I think, is intact.
Yeah.
Right? You're one of the greatest ever. Right? And let's not debate where he falls in that.
You know how Messi has a best mate and they played, I forget what his name is, but they played, you know, since they were kids, and when he got cut from the Argentina team, it was a big team. When he didn't get chosen, it was a big deal. But is Ronaldo, like, I see all these...
Aguero? Men. You're talking about Aguero? Yeah.
Okay. No, but sorry. but I see all these soccer stars who have really good buddies. And Ronaldo wasn't one of those guys to me that had this group. And, you know, we saw what happened when how he was kind of welcomed back to the Portugal team 4 years ago after being at Man U. There was like some chaos going on. And I always sit there and I go, I don't see him with really big football friendships. But, you know, whether he's hanging out with superstars and Piers Morgan, and he thinks of these people as his friends. So, but I don't see him in like with really close, you know, like just like Beckham got Messi
Neville
to go play.
And Giggs and Neville, those guys. Yeah, they're mean, buddies, right? Yeah,
yeah, they're buddies. It's you know, point. It's just it interesting to me to see how his career will go, whether it's kind of like in superstardom in soccer or kind of Michael Jordan-esque, you know, because Michael Jordan was one of the same kind of guy. He concentrates so much on sports, doesn't really have those close bonds with a lot of basketball players.
Is it harder for players of that stature to have football friends? I wonder, Jimmy. Guys that are that much better than everyone else. And obviously, with that comes ego. You talk about the greats, Ronaldo, Jordan, LeBron, huge egos. Is it difficult, do you think, to relate to your buddies on the team?
I guess maybe. I don't know. Like we always say, too, in football, it ships in a night because the dressing room changes so much every year. You know, and sometimes you do get a good friend, but then they end up moving to another club or another country, and then you don't have that bond that you used to have when you were in the dressing room, and then you try to pick another bond with somebody else. And because everybody's moving all the time. So it's not like you're in, you know, one club with a couple of guys that you've been there for, you know, 10 years. Kind of like Beckham. Beckham grew up with those guys through the system, and played together with Man United for years and years. So they created those bonds. But I can imagine at times for him, you know, being at Sporting, then going to Man U, then going to Real Madrid, then going here. It's probably difficult for him. And I'm sure he does have some really close friends that he keeps in touch with. And now when you retire, that's the time for you to kind of rekindle those relationships as well, right? Because most of them are probably retired. And
he does seem like actually a family guy as well. He does seem that way in as he gets older. Dubs, were your closest friends within football or were they outside football?
Growing up and then even through college and post-university, it was always the people that I was playing sport with. I mean, I had other friends and I had other pursuits and interests and passions, but it came down to the fact that most of my time was spent like working on my own individual skill or seeking out other people who had a common goal and doing things with them. And so those bonds were created with the people that I was on the pitch with, and they remain my closest friends to this day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's tough too. I mean, when I look at it, because I left at 17 and I came back when I was 30. So I grew up in England and my good friends were all footballers. And now that I end up coming back to Canada, they've gone to France. Some still live in the UK. And then even on the national team, like my roommate, you know, for instance, with like Zauza lives in Vancouver. So you don't get to see these guys as much as what you'd like to, but you still, when you do see them, it's like you've never lost touch. Mm-hmm. You just pick it up where you left off and you have the banter, the good stories. And yeah, so it's difficult at times for sure.
It's like us when we're gone for a while and we see each other's faces, you know, via the remote record, but there's nothing like being in person and doing that. And then it's just seamless. It's like we don't miss a beat. And it's the same thing when you're in the trenches with your teammates and you're riding out the ebbs and the flows, and there's nobody else that really understands that. So you have your family, you have your other friends, but when you look those people in the eye, like you just remember everything, it all comes flooding back, and so does the camaraderie. I just worry about a guy like Ronaldo, back to your original point, Charms. He almost exists in isolation. So does he have those shared relationships and those shared experiences that create those, you know, unbreakable bonds? I don't know if he does. Yeah. Like he was living it, but was he experiencing it in the same way? I'm not so sure.
He got married this past week, didn't he? I wonder how many former teammates were at the wedding. Maybe there's articles. I haven't read one article about the wedding. I don't care about it. but maybe that was mentioned, you know. And often in these cases, it's some teammate before they became famous they've retained that connection with, right? That relationship. Maybe he can just like stuff it down somebody's throat all the time. By the way, I made it, you didn't. And that's why he feels good beside this person. It's like everyone needs a fat friend. You feel good beside that person.
Like Jimmy eating wings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, going back to that. You know, I jest very inappropriately. But yeah, no, listen, he's Ronaldo. You know, I'm sure he'd be okay. But not being involved in football, I wonder how long that will last. Will he want to get into ownership? I mean, obviously not coaching or that side of things, perhaps, but does he want to, because if he wants to buy a club, he can buy a club. Maybe that competitive drive will be there still continuing, maybe. Rodri, by the way, has moved to Barcelona kind of quietly, actually. Don't you sense that? This is Rodri, who we've been like, during the World Cup, Dubs, we're saying this is maybe at this point the best player in world football. Certainly in his position, the most important player in world football. He grabbed that Spain team. The play went through him. Brilliant footballer. Did the same for Man City for years. Did the ACL. Just kind of got back to his top form towards the end of last season. And now he's gone. Seems to Barcelona. Mm-hmm. For about 75, 80 million. A guy in his 30s. That's why it's not that price that you'd expect, perhaps. But that was it feels like an under the radar move. The Premier League looked very different this season for a number of reasons, but Rodri not being at Man City, that really kind of jumps out to me.
It does to me as well, especially when you see him, you mentioned it, at the World Cup where he wins the best player, wins the golden ball, right?
Yeah. Golden ball, golden boot, golden glove, golden ball.
Forced. And what's that?
That was forced.
Yeah, the golden ball. Yeah, exactly. So he's back to pre-ACL Rodri, you know, the player that we came to expect. And he was so dominant. He pulled the strings. He was a vital player for Spain as they navigated the World Cup and as they lifted the trophy. So it's strange to me, and it will be strange to see him in a Barcelona kit. And it was also strange to watch the Community Shield and to not see him in the heart of that midfield for City. Entering the Maresca era with tons of pressure on him and tons of pressure on the club. But it'll be weird to not see a guy who's been a keystone piece of that club. But yeah, I look forward to watching him. But I do think that you're right. Like there's, I mean, a little blip on the radar and obviously a player of his renown and his stature, his quality. I just figured more people would be talking about it, but it's just be like, oh yeah, okay, he's making the move. But I expected that it would make more noise, make more ripples in the world of football, but it hasn't.
You know why it is, Jimmy? I think it's because only those that really watch football closely and kind of get the game really fully appreciate Rodri, right? He's not the guy scoring 25 goals a year, although he can make a beautiful pass. We know that he's not known for his, you know, tons of assists. He just does what he does. He dictates the tempo. He just does it better than anyone else. But that's perhaps why the greater football world, the zeitgeist, as it were, isn't going crazy about this signing, because he's not sexy.
He's a sexy player, Shams.
For you, he is. Though, because you know the game as well as anyone, right? You get it.
Yeah.
The average general fan can say, "Yeah, decent player," but doesn't really see the intricacies and nuances of his play.
Yeah, people. I agree with that. I think a lot of people don't understand his work and what he brings to a team. And for me, he's that type of player that you can never replace him. There's no other Rodri that's out there. And I know I'm reading about it because you're going online and you're trying to follow to see what's happening. And there's been talk, obviously, in the press about him moving to Barcelona. That was where he wanted to go, because I think Real Madrid as well. But he said, no, if I'm going, it's Barcelona. But Barcelona, they've got to be over the moon with that signing. And then obviously you can see, even though Man City got Anderson, it's still not a Rodri. Still not a Rodri, because Rodri's football IQ is off the chart.
Although £116 million, they better hope that Anderson gets somewhat like Rodri at some point. But what a different team this year, right? Wrong.
He's amazing.
Yeah, he is. Mm-hmm. But what a different, I mean, you're talking about different feels and looks this year, Jimmy. I mean, City, no Pep. No Rodri, and they lose 3-0 to Arsenal in the Community Shield. That's not to say they're going to be a failure. Just putting that out there. It's the Community Shield. I'm not sure how important it really is.
Is this but the year?
There was still a fair amount of rotation in that game, too.
Yeah. It was still essentially a preseason exhibition, but it's probably the most important of the preseason exhibitions, right?
Yep.
I was just thinking, though, is this the year that Man City gets, like, their finally their fair play justice, or does this finally happen? Have we ever
comeuppance, Wonger?
Yes, both on the pitch and off the pitch, and they go, I don't know, I'm just, is it finally going to happen? Right? Financial fair play.
Where are we at with this? Do we know?
I don't know. I still remember like 105 charges that have kind of mysteriously disappeared into the wake. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what happened to it.
Well, could Pep's departure be a foreshadowing of sanctions at some point? Did he say, this is probably the right time to leave?
maybe Trump made a phone call and then just all
maybe, you know,
this could be a conspiracy theory, right? Like, is it finally comeuppance? Time for some reckoning for good old Man City.
The fact that we haven't heard anything about it suggests that no, it's just still in the courts.
I agree.
Gonna be pushed down the road a little bit further. You know? I don't know. But so City weren't good yesterday. Arsenal were really good. I mean, listen for what it is. It is, like I said, it used to be called the Charity Shield years ago, and it was a big day in English football, the curtain raiser. But obviously for Arsenal, it means a lot, and they look pretty pumped to get their first trophy of the season. But if you lose it, it's not the worst thing in the world either. But at least the preseason is all but done now. Does anyone enjoy the preseason in any sport? Probably not, right? I mean,
you mean like living it yourself or watching it as a fan?
Well, let's say living it yourself. Obviously, it's pretty good to get back with your teammates after some time off, right? But it must get tired pretty soon.
It's a bit of a slog when you're going through it yourself. It's, you have to really focus on the day to day and being in the present moment and not projecting forward too much, both for your own development, but where the team is as well. So you're managing that yourself, you're managing expectations, and you're moving and you're progressing through where you want to be, right? Whether it's your physical preparation and you've got like these waves and these different peaks that you want to hit, but also individually, like your development plan, and then also how that aligns with the team and the goals and the objectives on the year. But really, when it comes down to it, it's mental gymnastics, because you just want to get through it. It's really tough because you've got the fitness testing that you're staring down the barrel of, and you know that there's going to be significant rotations. You might be coming in with a little bit of a nagging injury that you're having to manage, but ideally you're coming in and you're fit and you're ready to go, but with the understanding that you've got to put the knife between your teeth and just get on with it. And it's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult, but there'll be an ending to it. You'll be able to close the chapter and move on once that season kicks off.
I hope this isn't foreshadowing, but literally my little Liverpool plaque just fell off the wall behind me. Ooh. Oh dear. Oh God. But yeah, I guess if you're a new player to a new team, it means, you know, obviously it means more new managers. Speaking of which, new managers. There's 9 new managers in the Prem this year. 9. I want to read this little piece here by The Athletic, just to break down just the changes. Mikel Arteta and Unai Emery are the only managers who have been at their clubs for longer than 3 years. Regis Lebris, who arrived at Sunderland in 2024, is the 4th longest serving manager in the Premier League. David Moyes, whose second spell at Everton is barely 18 months old, is 7th. Bournemouth's Marco Rose is 12th, and he has yet to take charge of a game. Total change or shuffling of managerial chairs, which makes it to me really fascinating. I didn't even realize, honestly, till last week that Eddie Howe had left Newcastle. I think I was away when that happened. I didn't know. I'm listening to some podcast, and what the hell are you talking about? Eddie Howe's left Newcastle. So big changes.
I felt the same way. Sorry, Sharms, when I looked at the 11s for the Community Shield, I was like, Bruno Guimarães? What? It's like, oh, yeah. I know. So I felt like I was slapped in the face.
Guimarães and Howe, like Newcastle looks different, right? Is it because of the new kits? Yeah. And how bad they are? holy crap, Jimmy, these new Newcastle kits, they look like a barcode. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a simple kit. Yeah. It's one of the best kits in all of football, the typical Newcastle kit. Why would they do this?
It's hard to mess up, isn't it?
Yeah.
That kit, it's just simple. Black and white stripes, that's it.
Don't mess with
it. And they want to get all fancy. Yeah, I don't get it. I really
well, you know what they're doing? They want these guys to walk past scanners, so then the kit will come up with a price so everyone could see it. And they could go, oh, £169. Perfect. I'm buying that kit. That
probably is it, actually. Maybe that's the reason. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I don't know. I don't like it, but we'll get
I don't like it at all. But you know, with like the kit development, and Jimmy, you can speak about this with your involvement with TFC, and I know about it based on my time with CF Montreal, and even working with the Roses, like and NSL working with Hummel, but MLS is with Adidas. Like, you're talking about kit and you're in development with the people who are planning it, and you have your ideas, your marketing team, 2 and 3 years in advance. Right. So the person who is responsible for this kit is likely not even with the club anymore. Right. Like, it's so strange to me. I mean, it's the reality of it. But yeah, this is a bad kit and somebody's head should be on the chopping block, because how do you cock that up? Honestly, like, it's a beautiful, iconic kit and they've gone and wrecked it.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, you always get someone that tries to be creative and think outside the box and, oh, this is really good. But then somebody has to sign off on it. It's not like they just make a kit and give it to you. Mm-hmm. So someone in the club has gone, that is the one for this season.
This is the winner, boys. That
person is. I want to know who that person is.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry, I missed
that. But I'm happy with my Forest kit this year. Very good. I don't know if you guys have seen it yet.
No, I haven't.
In a way, off the chart.
But so is it kind of traditional though, like based in tradition still?
It's red, but then it's got like mist going through it from the Trent. And then the away kit is like a dark forest green with red.
Mm. And it looks wow.
Sharp.
That's right. You showed it to us on the dark web. It's the forest green one. This year. Yeah, yeah. It does look decent. It does.
I love a forest green. Big fan.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. A forest anything, really.
I know, especially a Craig Forest.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is forest green different to British Racing Green?
I think somebody who's in design would say yes, but in my mind, they're one and the same, because I don't give a shit about cars. But if there's like a Range Rover or a Porsche and it's in British Racing Green, I'm like, sign me up. Just put me in that car. And I really don't care about cars. I just need to get me from point A to point B. But I love a British Racing Green when it comes to cars.
A Jaguar in British Racing Green looks like it'll break down in 2 years, but
it looks amazing. It cost you a fortune, but it looks great.
Exactly.
I've never seen a Porsche in British Racing Green, I don't think.
You haven't?
No? They're usually kind of twatty colors for a Porsche, aren't they?
Mm.
Can you really get a Porsche in a British Racing Green? Are you serious? I honestly don't think I can think of seeing
really?
One.
Really? Because listen, I don't know. I'm not the person to ask. Like, I'm so not a car person. But when I think about classic cars and I think about ones that kind of turn my head, it's usually these classic cars. And I love a Porsche, whatever. And I love a British Racing Green. Like, it's iconic to me, just like the Newcastle black and white stripes. It's very hard to mess it up, but Newcastle have done.
But they have.
Yes.
I'm sure there's some car people out there listening who can let us know. The MGs,
and,
the old MGs.
And there's also some designer crying in the corner right now if they listen to Footy Prime.
Yeah.
Yes. Sorry.
Yeah.
You did a great job. Great try.
You're right, Charms. The MG. MG and four screen.
That beautiful, was right?
Yeah, my two-seater I had to sell because I kept pulling my hamstring.
An MG, did you really? Oh, that was it. Was it the one that you, that was the one? Oh, no.
That was the one, yeah.
Ah, they're great little cars.
Oh, it was amazing.
Wow. Yeah.
That was my mom's first car that she bought with her own money when she was a teacher. Little red MG two-seater, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nice, nice. Then Mazda tried to do it with the Miata. This wasn't quite the same.
Not the same, is it?
Not quite. Moving on, football. Listen, you mentioned the EFL Championship. Carl Laren scored in Southampton's opening match. He scored last week as well in a qualifier, I think it was, for something or other. He started off the season really, really well. There's talk now of Daniel Jeberson staying with Bournemouth in the Prem. We'll see what happens there, but that would obviously be a great move for him. John David has reportedly turned down a few clubs, Dubs. Yeah. Right now, remaining at Juventus, there's still lots of noise out there around him. I saw Aston Villa mentioned last week, but I think it's Trabzonspor, and it was Hull. Apparently, he's turned down, fighting for his position, which I respect. Whether he's just leveraging for a move to a different club, I don't know. But certainly John David is someone to watch the next few weeks.
Yeah, and still linked with PSG, right? Where he
is
wouldn't
he still linked there?
I believe so.
I mean, he signed a striker, yeah. Right?
Oh, okay. So maybe not. But I think for me, if I'm Jonathan David, like that's where you go back to. You go back to France. I mean, maybe not to PSG, where you obviously wouldn't be the main man. But you join a club of renown and clout and kind of get your feet back underneath you and score some goals again. I think that's where he's best suited, honestly. But I don't know. I think he has to move. Like, I know he's turned down some clubs, but I think he needs a fresh start. He really needs to turn the page right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think when you think about it, and I understand, you know, he's probably thinking the second year I've always done better and I'm going to find my feet and I'm going to start taking off here. But you finish the World Cup and you come back, you walk in the dressing room and they've signed two other strikers and you're looking going, okay, like now I've got to compete against not only the other guy, but now I got another new faces I've got to compete against. Is this going to be challenging for me? And am I going to be the number one here? And if you're his agent, you're probably in his ear and saying, let's get the hell out of here and let's go now while you got some stock, you got some value here. And if PSG is calling it, if I was him, I'd be going to PSG in a heartbeat because you know the league, you've scored bundles of goals in that league. You're comfortable in France and go. But again, if Villa calls as well and Villa wants you, then why not go test your luck in the Premier League?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know, footballers and John David, an uber competitive guy, he doesn't want to leave with a perception of being a failure at Juventus. He doesn't want that. If he believes in himself, which he clearly does, you can see why he'd want to fight for his spot there.
Yeah, but if a manager doesn't like you and doesn't want you, you can fight all you want.
Yeah, it's true. Well, one to watch anyway. When is the window close? It's, I don't know when it is.
September 1st, I think.
Is it the 1st? Yeah. Is it going to vary around Europe? I haven't even looked at this yet. I hate the fact that we talk about it every year, don't we? We whine about it. Why does a window close after the start of the seasons? Mm-hmm. You know, if they made it just, you know, earlier in August, be a lot like mid-August before anything started up, just be easier.
But yeah, it would be. Because you find yourself in a bit of a limbo there, right? For Jonathan David anyway. Like, I understand the point that you're making, that you want to make things right. You want to end on a high, or you want to prove to yourself that you can have success even after a rocky start. But the season kicks off on August 23rd. So he's participated in all the preseason and you're trying to get your feet underneath you. You're trying to find your rhythm. And then it's another week later where that window slams shut. So I think it would be better for him, the individual, the player, to be out of there before the season officially kicks off.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. But it's so hard to do any kind of preview material for these leagues because, you know, the Prem kicks off on Friday. We'll be doing some preview stuff later this week. But it's hard to know, to really handicap who's going to do what without knowing who's going to be signing where, because Arsenal still want a striker. We know that. Mm-hmm. You know, they thought they were in for Vinny Jr. I don't think they ever were, but they obviously have some money to spend. Liverpool have several holes still to fill, as do Manchester United. Chelsea have a new manager. They're looking pretty good right now. They're probably going to sign someone. They always do, or at least sell someone. They've got so many players. You know, and City, well, they look pretty set, but they lose Rodri. Is there someone coming in? Mm-hmm. So it's so hard to predict the top four or five. I mean, look at Spurs. Your beloved Spurs, Wonger.
Yes, my beloved Spurs. You know, I just find it so. I was thinking though for what Jimmy said about you and your agent having a chat and saying, "Hey, there's no space for you here with two new strikers for John David." But it's only been a year, right? And getting your feet under you, and I know, but it seems like living in limbo as a professional footballer would be. I'd have a hard time in my head. like feeling like wanted versus I need to find some place I feel wanted. And I'm wondering, you walk into that dressing room, Jimmy, and there's two new strikers. Whether you feel wanted or not, it's pretty quick that you're going to feel unwanted if that's your new stark reality.
Well, exactly. Right. And that's the whole thing. When as soon as you walk in, you see, oh, they've got new players. You're thinking, what's going on here? And if it doesn't matter what position it is, if they're going out and buying players in your position, you know, sometimes I get it. It's for competition. But then other times you start questioning, going, well, hold on a minute.
Yeah.
You know, is this a sign now that the manager's not big on me? And does he start that guy? Then I'm out the door. So then you start thinking about yourself. Okay, well, if he doesn't want me and you're getting players in, then it's time for me to move. Because I'm not going to sit here and sit in the bench for a whole season.
Well, that's it. It's the start. You mentioned stark reality, Wonger. Like what's staring him in the face is he's 26 years old. He's smack dab in the middle of his prime. Is he going to languish on the bench and he's going to languish kind of playing subpar, languish in subpar conditions where he's not at his best or not surrounded in an environment where he can perform optimally? So you got to think about that as well. Like the big picture for me, John David, for my career is maybe to exit, even if you have to make peace with the fact that you didn't see success.
Yeah. Come to the Prem, John. Come on. Come on. You know, if Aston Villa's calling you, come to Villa, man. They're a great team. They've lost some big names this past off season. There's some spots to fill. Come on, John. Do us a favor. Those of us that have to wake up early on a Saturday morning, forced to watch the Premier League, you know, with our breakfast in bed. I want to see more Canadians there. Nice we've got Dan Jeberson now, probably, you know.
Getting served divorce papers while you're lying there.
Yeah.
Not looking like Alistair Johnston, though, is going to be making that move to Everton with another injury.
This so Canadian side, our national men's team players, I think there's also been a bit of a curse. Did they have an old curse put on them before the World Cup and afterwards?
Was it the same woman that put the curse on the Mayo? Hell, man, that's terrible.
Well done.
There's something though going on. There's something weird. The dark arts, perhaps, because there's a lot of injuries right now, for sure.
Can I talk about curses a little bit here?
Yeah,
AFC Toronto, there was, okay, listen, a chaos bomb went off in NSL this past weekend. I was on all three matches and Calgary won. It's great to see them win. They won in CAN champs and then now they're back-to-back winners in league play after not picking up a win through 14 matches. So that's pretty incredible. They win 4-3 against top of the table Ottawa Rapid. And then Vancouver gets a win at Swangard after they had gone winless in three. Jessica Philippeau, top of the Golden Boot race now with 9 goals. She's on fire. And then the match I was covering yesterday, Montreal Roses, they just sacked their coach, Robert Rossatoyou, after they lost shocking cup set to Simcoe County Rovers midweek in Canadian Championships, but they're second in the table. So a lot of people saw that, including myself, as a knee-jerk reaction, but apparently it was brewing for a little while. But AFC Toronto have not won at BMO Field. Ever.
Ever. That's crazy.
Ever. And there were some dubious officiating, or there was some dubious officiating in the league recently, a rash of red cards. DB Pridham got sent off in the Calgary win, really soft second yellow. There have been straight reds for Dogsos, which you would expect Tory Tumuth. That's a right call, but other ones where it's straight red for dissent and you're not really sure what it was said, but controversial calls where Kaylee Hunter had tons of opportunities. One looks like it saved off the line from Karpenko, but Hunter is convinced that it crossed the line on a rebound, but there's no VAR. There's no way to see it. Shalina Zdorsky scores what would have been the equalizer, but it's called off for offside. So a player in the offside position, her header goes in and then it's canceled. Because they rule that the player in the offside position was obstructing Karpenko. That's the only way I can see that call happening. And then within the next 2 minutes, Montreal scores the second goal to double their lead. And I even forgot to mention that the first goal scored by Mimi Alidou from the spot was a foul Sarah Rollins on Elise Bennett, the number nine for the Roses, appeared to be outside the box. And the referee is about to give the free kick, but then the assistant referee flags her down and says the foul was in the box, but it was not in the box. It was meant to be a free kick and not a pen. And that just, that so many swings of momentum, but dictated by the officiating.
Is this good though, that it's going to cause some angst and conversation? You don't want bad calls. I get it, but a fledgling league wants some noise around it, right? And that was a crazy weekend. Right. But if you layer that into what was a crazy weekend results wise and what happened last week in the cup and all this kind of stuff, it does bring the NSL to the forefront of a lot of Canadian football conversations. Right?
Yeah.
No news is bad news.
Well, we talked about it. Dubs and I were going back and forth a little bit on the dark web, and I'm wondering if this is a level of growing pains. Some officiating bruising, because these are new officiants at a higher level now, expected to be more accountable. And sometimes officials need to find their place too within a match. And there are all these new professional, like this is a new league with now these are professional referees, from side judges to everything across the board. And I would assume that these mistakes happen. And having them be focused on, because now they're all broadcast, right? And maybe this is a Dubs. Do each team grade refs like they do in other leagues, where they say, "Hey, this," you know? So at the end of the year, the best refereeing crew is put together to run the playoffs.
I would imagine so, but if. I don't know if each team or sporting director or investors and owners are able to grade the referees. Like that would obviously introduce a significant amount of bias, but the league is certainly doing it. And Canada Soccer is doing it in the way that they're evaluating the referees and they're getting feedback in real time. And then also post game, they're going back doing postmortem, seeing how they can do better. But I think it is part of developing a domestic league. It's right. Everything that surrounds the on-pitch and the on-pitch. When an important part of it is your officials or your, as you said, officiants.
Well,
referees and officials, right? Yeah. And side judges. But Jimmy, I mean, this is an issue in CPL as well. This is not unique to NSL.
No, of course. I mean, it's happened with the CPL as well. You know, you get some... And look, the thing is, for me, as the league grows and develops, the standard raises, the officiating has to be in line with it as well, right? The officiating can't be here as the league continues to grow and get better. So that obviously becomes a problem. But it does take a little bit of time. I know Isaac and his staff and a number of people be keeping close eye on the officials and helping them out, and because it is adjustment, right? Every level's even harder. The game's faster. It's a lot more going on than what happens in the lower league. So you're taking these referees that have been lower league, and now all of a sudden you're putting them into the top league, and it's going, okay, ref. And they're like, what is going on here? You know they're going to make mistakes. And it does become frustrating, yes, as players and staff, and because there's so much at stake now. But they have to stay in line with the league and the standard of the league. They can't drop.
Yes. Now CPL have changed a lot this year too, right? With their VAR system, FVS, they call it, the new offside laws. Now, Jimmy, I mean, very briefly on this, we haven't got much time left, but I think overall I like the new system, but the review is taking way too long. And the challenge system, which on paper looks great, what we're finding is late in games, if a coach has a challenge left and there's a goal scored at the death, just naturally, even if it's clearly a perfect goal, the opposing manager decides to challenge it because why not? Nothing to lose, right? Which just delays it even more. And these games are going on way too long, right? So I get that there's definitely progress there, Jimmy, but there's still a fair amount to work out, it seems.
No, there is. I mean, I think the one thing that bothers me is normally the fourth official is actually a head referee in the league, right? The TV's there. Have a look. Why do you need to call over the other ref, who's a head ref, who's doing the game? make him come all the way over so that he can have a look. But you're a head ref on your own. Just make the call. Just have a quick look. Just give him a thumbs up, thumbs down. But I don't understand why you need two head guys looking at it.
Yeah, there's a lot of confusion there for sure. I want to mention just very briefly, Emrik Fotsing of FC Vancouver off to the Whitecaps after a brilliant U20 tournament. So we're seeing, you know, these young CPL stars making moves now slowly to MLS. We'll see how it works out for him. But a pretty good player there. This past weekend, actually, Pacific, they drew Vancouver. Good result for Pacific, but they're still over a calendar year now without a win. Oof. The Terry Downfields, like a calendar year over without a win. Terran Campbell, by the way, if you haven't seen it, the equalizer for Vancouver in that match, a bicycle kick, pretty cool. Pretty great goal. Mm-hmm. And Cavs beat Forge 2-1. Owen Antoniak with a thunderfucker of a finish. It's a thunderfucker. Like, I don't use it often, right? But I think at times, Dubs, you saw it? Do you see it?
I did not. I'm just appreciative of your descriptive language. Yeah.
Well, now you know what it looks like. Hey, Jimmy, it was amazing. Just a belter from way out.
Yeah, it was a belter.
Also, Sharms, just a shout out to get onto the broadcast from last week so you can catch up. NSL, Carmelita Muscata. But
Muscato?
Muscato, sorry. Carmelita, sorry. You can come on the show and correct me. But Ottawa will be hosting the Northern Super League final. Mm-hmm. And in my brain, I just kind of said, did they not see what happened in the CPL final last year?
I know.
Maybe that's why. Maybe that's why, because it went viral around the world.
Just saying.
Yeah.
I don't think it would have been played if that was NSL. I'm just going to say that. I know that they were under the gun because the construction was starting the next day. I understand all of that. But remember, there was snow at York Lions Stadium as well, right? They didn't have the proper equipment to clear it. That was the same day, and that was postponed until the Monday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're out of time. I'm saving the One Soccer Best 11 Ever that Jimmy, myself, and Jordan did 2 weeks ago now until Craig's back.
Okay.
We go get Craig's
really timely this. Content.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was still good, though. It's still definitely worthwhile.
And wait, you mentioned the thunderfucker of a goal, and I didn't watch this game, but I watched the highlights, and Vancouver Whitecaps, who were eliminated in Leagues Cup action midweek, beat the Seattle Sounders, and you had a brilliant indirect free kick and goal by Thomas Mueller. Mm. Those are always great to see, and they're a rarity now. You don't see them so often anymore, but really well executed.
Cascadia Cup win, yeah, and they're back in first place in the West, right?
It was also a 10:30 start, just so like I was all curled up. I knew the game was going to be happening, and I went, there is no way I can stay up on a Sunday. Like, come on, help me out here. I know.
It's... Check out the neat and tidy 10-minute highlight packs on MLSsoccer.com because they are great. Yeah. And that goal is pretty beautiful. Just a little finesse, just clever, mm-hmm. intelligent goal.
And the Sabi Alumi combination as well for the opening goal.
And finally, just one more mention. Our friends from the Footy Prime supporters were asking for a Asa, Ollie, and John Molinaro put together so we could talk MLS and what's been going on. So we promised to get those three together on the show again just to make sure we are all caught up with all the goings-ons in Canada's MLS teams.
Yes, fear not. They will be returning shortly. We just have to ask them first.
Yes.
They might say no.
It's bad for business to say no to us, Sharms. We know that.
And in some cases, to say yes to us. Yes. No.
Yeah, it's just bad for business.
All right, listen, we're back this week, probably Wednesday. We're trying to figure out some stuff, but probably Wednesday and Friday. Now, is there a broads this week, Dubs?
Yes, but Cigna, Shireen is just back from PEI, and Cigna just headed there herself yesterday, but wants to hop on the broad. So we're just trying to figure out the timing of it. It's usually a Tuesday, but not sure yet. Can't confirm.
Okay.
But there should be one.
We'll be having, though, just so you know, moving forward, like probably four, could be as many as five shows a week, but three main old school Footy Primes, Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, probably. But we've got some things we're working on, so just stay tuned. Yeah. Regarding that, but there will be bonus shows like the broadcast, like interview shows, etc., etc. All right, so thank you everyone, good to be back. I know we kind of dipped our toes in the Footy Prime pool last week, But it's good to be back. And we'll get you set later this week for the Premier League. Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Did you hear that, Wonga?
Legendary.
Yes. Hey, Wonga.
Yeah.
Who's Footy Prime brought by again?
BetMGM, I hear.
What are you Prime brought by? BetMGM.
Laters. Bye-bye.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com and sign up for our newsletter.
Wonga, you can be my side judge any day of the week.
Thank you.
The fuck is a side judge?
Line, what are they called?
Assistant referee?
Assistant referee.
Liney.
Judge.
Okay,
Liney judge. Anything other than what you said.
So good.
Please correct me. I like that.
And efficient.
Yes, be efficient.
All right, peace out, everybody.
See you again, Jay.
Thank you. Bye, Jimmy.
Bye-bye.